Metaphors. I hate English. English to me in college was a foreign language. So that's how excited I was about it. So I want somebody that knows to give a good definition of a metaphor, because our lesson is on discipleship and metaphors. So somebody give me a good definition. Y'all go to the same English class I went to? Sandra, you know English. Metaphor. What's a metaphor?
Well, it's something you can relate to. I'm not very good at explanation at this point. It's like a picture story that means has, double meaning.
Okay. Well, that's good. I got that part. Is metaphor direct? No, okay. All right, so we're talking about discipleships and metaphor. Well, one of my favorite stories in the Bible just happens to be in this lesson, so that's good, about David. David's up on the city, top of his building, and he looks down and he sees Bathsheba taking a bath. Now, when we were in Israel, one of the guides kind of intimated that usually the king had a schedule and that Bathsheba probably was aware of that schedule. And so maybe she's a little bit more involved in this story than we thought. So I just quote guides. And I certainly am not the type of person that thinks it's always the woman's fault. I'm not that way. But anyway, he sees her. He desires her. He meets her. And the next thing we know, what happened to her husband? Where was he put in the great battle? On the front line. And what did that mean? Instant death. If you ever watched old movies, those armies lined up against each other, and then they just marched towards each other. You're not a visitor, are you? I didn't think so. Marched towards each other, and the first row started fighting, and then when the person dropped dead, the next one moved up, the next one moved up, until finally one of the armies was winning and overtaking the other. So if you were on the front row, instant death. Because I don't care if you killed the first five people that you fought. You were going to get tired and you're getting absolutely a fresher soldier. So he gets killed, she marries him. They get married, have a baby. We all know that story. Now, here comes Nathan the prophet. And he comes to David and he says, I have a dilemma. I'm going to tell you a story. And then I need you to tell me what to do. Paraphrasing, there's this rich guy, and he's got a whole lot of little sheep. And he's having someone come to his house that he wants to entertain. And so he wants to have a nice sheep meal. And he goes and finds a poor guy who had only one little sheep. And oh, he loved that little sheep. That little sheep ate at the table, ate under the table, probably licked the dishes. That little sheep was everything. And so the rich guy takes the poor man's sheep, and now he is the main attraction at the meal. Now, David gets mad. And what does he say? Yeah. Punish him. And then Nathan says, thou art the man. And this hits home to David, and David eventually writes Psalms 51 plus some other Psalms. Now here's my question today. Why didn't Nathan go to David and say, "You idiot, what were you thinking?" That's a fair question. So what's the answer?
He probably would have been beheaded.
Pardon?
David was the king, and Nathan probably would have been beheaded.
Okay.
We tend to get defensive.
Got to speak up.
We tend to get defensive when we're confronted directly.
Okay. Yeah, what happens when you confront someone directly? Get mad, you get defensive. What else? What other? Why didn't he go to David and say, "The Lord has revealed to me"? Because the Lord did reveal it to him. Why beat around the bush?
He allowed David to...
Pardon?
He allowed David to pronounce judgment on himself.
Okay. Is that good or bad?
Worked.
Come back to our class every week. I like bottom line people. It worked. That's right.
I think before he passed judgment on himself, he felt a connection.
Okay.
He connected the dots.
Do you think David connected the dots before he said, "You are the man"?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
He was just enraged. How could this guy do this? What kind of person would do that? Thou art the man.
Then he recognized his own weaknesses and his own sin. Whereas before, although he knew it, he was covered it up. There was something in there that he
could look at. Okay. Now, let's... move to the New Testament. One of the people that I admire strongly is John the Baptist. Not for the reason a lot of people think. What I admire about John the Baptist, and my admiration of him really went up when about 30 years ago, I was blessed with the gift of humility. So I could relate to John the Baptist. Just think. Jesus said of John the Baptist what? What did he say about him being a prophet? Pardon? None greater. Now that takes in a lot of people. None greater. And so John the Baptist had the spotlight on him. And he was preaching and baptizing, and the priests were coming out, and the scribes were coming out to see what in the world. He had the spotlight on him. And then all of a sudden, here came the Son of God. And what I admire about John the Baptist was he was able to step aside and let the spotlight be on Jesus, the Lamb of God. And he played, in a sense, second fiddle. Now what's interesting is John the Baptist's disciples, now they didn't agree with this, because there was always problems between the disciples of Jesus and the disciples of John the Baptist. But John the Baptist stepped aside. But when John the Baptist was thrown in prison, what started working in his mind?
Doubt. Questions.
Doubt? How do we know it was doubt?
Well, his disciples were believing. He began to believe.
Yeah. Just a minute here. This guy said I was the greatest of all, and I'm sitting here in jail. Nothing's being done. this is kind of my cousin, and nothing's happened, and he begins to doubt. And then he calls his disciples, and he says something kind of strange. What did he tell his disciples to go do with Jesus?
Go ask him.
Ask him what?
Are you the one?
Are you the one? Now, wouldn't you think that that is kind of an insulting question to God? But the lesson is, God does not mind those questions. It's your answer that he's concerned with, but not the questions. We go back to Job. So John the Baptist sends the disciples to Jesus and says, "Are you the one?" Now, wouldn't this be a great time to pull out lesson 18 of the 20th century Bible course, and Jesus sat down and give the disciples of John a Bible study on the Old Testament and say, go back and tell John to study this until he gets it right. But what did Jesus do? Pardon? Yeah, he said the greatest witness a person can say, go back and tell him what you're seeing. Go back and just tell him what you saw.
First he asked him to follow them for a day, to come with him for a
day. Yeah. Watch how I treat my fellow man. Watch how I treat a leper who's never been touched for years. Watch how the children react. And so he goes back, and John accepts, and then we're told that the angels of heaven came down to John. And when his heart was ready, they took him back through the Old Testament and started pointing out to him the things that pointed forward to the Messiah. And by the way, God certainly looks good in this story so far. So, they came, they rescued John, and he got to go preach for many, many years. Right? What happened? Beheaded. Now, here's my point of the lesson today. Why did not Jesus sat down with John the Baptist early in John's career and say, John, I want to prepare you. Here's what's going to happen. And here's how it's going to end. But never fear, because you will be with me for eternity in heaven. Why does not God reveal to us the beginning and the end? Why did he not take the 12 disciples, sit them down, and say, got a flip chart, and said, let me write down here what's going to happen? I don't want any surprises for you. I don't want you to be shocked. And here's what's going to happen. And here's the end result. I will rise again. And I will come back. And we'll spend eternity with you. Why does he not do that? Yes?
He's done that with the children of Israel.
Pardon?
He had done that with the children of Israel in all the direct, kind of very powerful ways of, you know, drying the Red ecclesia, you know, do all of those different things. So, I mean, in a sense, the people didn't come to their own conclusions. They just kind of were in awe, but then quickly turned away.
Okay, going to come back to that. I like that thought. Yes?
I like what he said. What comes to my mind is, at one point he told the disciples, there are many things I want to tell you, but you weren't able to hear it.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying there's a lot of things I want to tell you, but you're kind of too dumb to understand them. Nice compliment. Rob?
You know, I find in my own experience that in how I've developed in my understanding of God, and there have been often times that I would look back at the beginning and some of the things, some of the conclusions that I came to in my theology and my relationship with God. And then I find that I'm at a different place now than I was then. And I said, Father, why in the world didn't you tell me this back there? Well, for me, I now recognize God never uses force. God wants me to make those discoveries about what He's like. And it just creates such a hunger and a thirst to know Him. I mean, it just drives you to know Him. So I think that is part of what God is trying to get across to us.
All right. So far, three good answers. Yes.
And I'm going along with what Dr. Rob is saying. There's a growth process. I mean, I don't think we'd be able to handle it if we knew all of it. I think we are the ones that need to grow. You guys, the whole ministry is what it's all about. We have to get to know God. God already, and Christ, they already know us from beginning to end, and we are the ones who don't know. We have to take the baby steps and get to know Christ and really get to understand that He really already accepts me exactly as crazy as I am today, you know, and accepts all the faults just as I am. So I have to then, you know, build that relationship and trust that He already has for me, but I have to accept that the love that He has for me is already there.
That's four good answers. Rodney.
I was sitting back thinking about all the answers I just heard. And mine is that if it was that easy, if God revealed what the beginning and the outcome would be, the end would be, we would take advantage of it and do whatever we want to. And because we know this is going to be the outcome anyway, so I can kind of like do what I want to.
Okay.
But I know that in the end.
So you have a danger here. You have a danger.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, why did Jesus just speak in parable? I guess it's a parable, a metaphor. Could that be? Okay. Why didn't He just speak plain?
He did speak.
They come to questions for Him, and instead of saying, yes, this is how it is, or no, this isn't it, He goes off in some story and says, oh, that reminds me. And why?
He did speak plain. He spoke in a way that they understood about everyday things. That was very plain to them. He couldn't speak to them about computers.
Okay. All right, so he was meeting them on their own term. That's absolutely correct. Yes.
Another thing, we're more apt to remember stories or illustrations or things, and so these will come back to their mind more readily than facts. This is what you need to do, and don't do this, and this, and this. So in the future, they were going to remember different things and what their meaning was.
Okay. Now, I'll come to you in a second. Why didn't God just say, now, I know why He didn't, because He wanted me to master it for Him. So this is a rhetorical question. Why didn't He say in Daniel, now 2,300 years from now, and by the way, every day stands for a year, and way down in 1844, this is going to happen. And along the way, in A.D. 31, this is going to happen. And in A.D. 30... I mean, wouldn't that just be reassuring when those dates came, instead of getting about 100 different interpretations of Daniel in the 2300 days? Why go through that? You had your hand up? Then I'll come to Jan.
I was just saying that you can stand there and teach me something all day long, and there's only parts of it that I'm going to actually comprehend until I take ownership of what's happening. The children of Israel, you know, they saw all the miracles and wonders, but they weren't necessarily involved. They just, you know, did their own thing.
Okay.
But they didn't grasp it and understand the complexity of what was going on because they never took ownership of it.
Okay. I like that. Jan?
And I was just going to add about the parables and the reason why Jesus used those so much is they have withstood the test of time. I mean, Jesus spoke those when he was here. I think the whole purpose and the whole reason he used those is because even today, we can still relate to those. I mean, I can read those and I have the very same understanding with clarity that I'm sure when Jesus spoke them, the people that heard them from his lips had the clarity of understanding the parables because God's people understand his word. He spoke those for his people to be able to understand and decipher. And every person who hears those parables today, we can recall those and tell those people when we witness and they can understand it too.
Okay. All right.
Jesus had a good lawyer.
Huh?
Jesus had a good lawyer. If you tell a story, you didn't say, oh, you said not to pay taxes. No, I said give what the Caesar said.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
okay.
You think about it. It's a masterful way to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So is it fair to say that when the student is ready, the teacher can teach? Would that be fair to lay that down as a principle? When the student is ready, the teacher can teach. Now, I want to share with you, again, this is from humbly, how I did a great job of witnessing for God. My uncle had passed away. And they were from the Church of Christ. Very nice people. And we were seated around. And my cousin Terry said, well, I don't feel too bad. This was at the after the funeral. I don't feel too bad because I know that my daddy is in heaven with my mother, who had passed away a couple of years earlier. My daddy is in heaven with my mother, and I know they're happy. And I said, what in the world are you talking about? Well, they're not in heaven. Go get your Bible. They're asleep. They're in the grave. What are you talking about? I've got to witness. Because back then, you see, the Sabbath school class asked questions, how many of you all witnessed this week for Jesus? And so I wanted to raise my hand. And so I proceeded to tell them just how misguided they were. And they received it tremendously. And they said, what church again do you go to? And they said, well, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. And one of them I overheard, because I could hear then, can't hear today, but I could hear then, one of them said, man, mark that church down and hope we never run across it again. Is that witnessing?
Great disciples.
You were witnessing. It's just what you were witnessing.
Wrong side.
Then why do we take that approach with other people of other faiths and people that we come in contact with? Nathan did not go to David and say, "You know better. You're an idiot. God has sent me here to tell you." No, he took an indirect route where David, as haughty as he was, as kingly as he was, who, like most people, when they commit something wrong, they tend to want to hide it, not think about it, pull the covers up over their head, hope it goes away, hope everybody forgets about it. And so he becomes enraged and pronounces his own judgment. Now, you talk about God being fair, that's about as fair as you can get. Why didn't God go tell John the Baptist, "Look, this isn't going to really end too great for you"? And more important, why do we tend to pick in our witnessing points of conflict and try to drive them home? Now, the last 27 years, I've made most of my three dimes and a nickel being a sales trainer. And the first thing you do in selling is find a common ground. Second thing you do is find a need. Third thing you do is supply the need. One of the questions that comes up all the time is, what about ADT? What about ASG? What about Protection One? These are our chief competitors. I tell them that they really are bad, horrible companies. No! Compliment them. ADT is a nice company. Been around forever. ADT protects the White House. They protect the governor's mansion in Austin. But let me tell you why you need to do business with Hawk. We don't protect the White House. We don't protect the governor's mansion. Only house we pick protect is yours and your neighbor's house, because that's where our business is. So why ADT, a very nice company, is protecting the big boys, we're protecting you. You are our top priority, not the governor's mansion nor the White House. You. We do not bash the competition one iota. Because if you have ADT, what am I saying if I bash it? You're an idiot! Yeah. I will tell you this story. I was part owner of a company called U.S. Alarm. And I was in a house and I was selling a guy a U.S. Alarm system. Some guy knocked on the door. We were doing the paperwork. And the owner went to the door. I could hear him. And he said to the door knocker, he says, "Well, hey, I'm in here with a guy and we're just finishing up the paperwork. Thanks coming by." And the guy says, "Well, who are you doing business with?" And he says, "Well, I'm doing business with a company called U.S. Alarm." "Oh, man," he says, "that's a horrible company. Don't do that. That's a mistake." And the guy says, "Well, no, I'm very comfortable with doing business." "Oh, man, I tell you what. Let me come in and let me, you know, blah, blah, blah." And the guy wouldn't. Finally, he says, "Here's my business card." And he says, "When they come out and mess up the install, mess up your house, call me and I'll come back and straighten everything." Well, the homeowner was mad. He come back and says, "God, that guy insulted me." So when I got through and everything, I said, "Would you mind if I took his card?" "No, here it is." Now, this was back in the days when we didn't have cell phones. Remember those days, Charles? Way back then. So you did have a beeper. And since she had no cell phones, when the beeper went off, guess what she had to do? Stop and find a payphone and call. Now, this probably wasn't very nice, but the guy made me mad, so I kept his card on my desk in my office. And so about three times a week, I would look up Fort Worth Police Department, Arlington City Council, some big real numbers, and I'd wait till about 5 o'clock when the traffic was heavy, and I would put in the number of the deal. And I did that for about three times a week, just as religious as I could do it. Until about 4 or 5 months later, one time I put the number in and it says, this number no longer works. So my point is, who are we to tell people they are stupid, they are wrong, because they believe a little bit different than us, or they go to a church that is different than us, or they perceive things that are different from us? You see, we want to take the direct path. You know, I never forget, and bless his heart, I'm sure he meant good, some Adventist in St. Louis, when the Pope here, time gets away from you, put up a big billboard in St. Louis because the Pope was coming, you know, the Antichrist. And then we think we're going to win people to heaven like that? You think that they're just going to flock to us? You see, Jesus worked indirect. Metaphors, parables, whatever you want to call it. Because his job was not to convert people. His job was to lay the groundwork that would arise a need in the people for something other than what they had in their life. And then they would look at him. That's why we find Jesus going around healing sick, not preaching. Touching lepers, not preaching. Holding children in his lap, not preaching. He went around doing good, taking care of humanity, that they beheld him and they said, how do you do this? Why do you do this? And then he said, follow me. And in our witnessing, collectively, we would have jumped all over David and voted him right out of the church. Especially 30 years ago. Right, Dave? Right on out the church. Because we've got to stay pure. Jesus, outside of the Pharisees, who were so pious, you ought to do a study on how he worked with the Pharisees. The prodigal son, my favorite story of the entire Bible, was for the Pharisees. Because they were the elder brother. He worked with the Pharisees, he begged the Pharisees, he worked with them, but then eventually he got direct with them. But other people, always indirect. Always looking for a need, and then he would fill the need. Then they would want to follow him. Witnessing is not handing a tract out on the state of the dead. Didn't it sound stupid, asinine, when I said, well, no, your dad's not in heaven with your mother. What's wrong with you? Didn't that sound crazy? Is that any crazier about why don't you not accept the Sabbath? How come you keep going to church on Sunday? You know better. Isn't that just as nuts? And then we wonder why people don't flock to us. I came across a passage in the Scripture. I used it, Thursday night when we recorded. El Olam, name of God. God who works in secret. I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting way, till I started looking at it. And then I went to Psalms where David said something very interesting. It's a phrase I've heard all my life. I just accepted it, didn't think about it. Was, thy word is a what unto my feet? A lamp unto my feet. Well, big deal. But then I got thinking, because that does happen every once in a while. Today, if we start on a journey out in the woods at night, what would we take with us? A big old flashlight. A big old lantern. A big old light that would shine way off so we could see, right? Wouldn't that make sense? Well, back in those days, all they had was a lamp. And it didn't put out a whole lot of light. So if you were walking down a path in the middle of the night and did not know where you're going, and you had your little lantern, how many steps would that illuminate, you think? One or two. And so you hold that lamp and it looks good. You take two steps. Then you see the next two. You see the next two. And eventually you're down the journey. That is the way that God works in our life. Step by step. Little by little. That's why I like Dave's deal. Two situations, right? God didn't come along on Monday and say, wow, let me put the light on it. Here you're going to be on Friday, and you're going to be just thrilled. Number one, Dave would not appreciate it. Friday. Number two, he'd want to know what's going to happen the next 2 weeks. And then eventually be mad because God didn't tell him what's going to happen the whole year, you see? So God says, look, me and you are on a journey together. You've got to trust me. So I'm the God of secret. I know where we're going. I know what was happening. I knew you before you were even in your mother's womb. There's a song out in the story where Jesus says, I knew you before you were in the womb, and when I look at you, I see my Father's fingerprints on you. That's how precious you are to Him. But He gives us enough light to just get through today. And then we get through tomorrow. And we get through the next day. And He continues to be with us, continues to walk with us. And then as we walk, we're shocked at how far we've gone. You know, one of my favorite stories, I tell it all the time, but what the heck, is the story of Enoch. How many of y'all remember the story of Enoch? Good. Well, good. Some memories are bad, so I'll retell it then. Little girl summed up how Enoch was translated. She says, every day Enoch and God went for a walk. And they talked and they enjoyed each other so much that every day they walked further and further and further. And one day, God realized they had walked so far that he said, Enoch, listen, we're closer to my house than we are your house. Come on over to my house. We laugh. But that is the truth. Let me tell you, I look back in my witnessing and I shake my head and say, man, what a stumbling block I was. I held no light for those people to walk. I built walls up that they had to jump over and they could not. Because you see, I grew up taught and felt if you wanted to get to heaven, you had to keep the seventh-day Sabbath. Now, if that is the final test of getting to heaven, where would you put your emphasis on? Where? Seventh-day Sabbath. Wow. Well, I forgot about you got to kind of know Jesus. Kind of got to know God. You know, that help. Doesn't belittle the Sabbath. Because the Sabbath is one of the greatest blessings God's given us. It's the way we present it. What a stumbling block. Paul tried it. Preached that hardcore sermon. Said, I didn't win anybody. So I'm going to just preach Jesus Christ crucified, and that's it. It's where we need to be. God loves everybody here in this class. You are unique. Nobody has your DNA that God gave you. Nobody has your fingerprints that God gave you. And nobody is more special.